Hello, it's Your Politics. I'm Áine Lawler, and we have the election date. We have Paul Cunningham, Mary Regan and Micheál Lehane. So let's get straight into it this week. The 29th, Micheál.
The 29th, yeah, clarity. I suppose unusual, really, that there is such clarity before someone goes to Áras an Uachtaráin. Not unprecedented. Bertie Ahern did tell the Sunday Independent in advance of him going in 2007, but this was even extra notice. And of course, it was all out there before Simon Harris spoke at all. Is that really a sign of great partnership or partnership just falling apart? Audrey O'Gorman essentially giving the date weeks ago of the 29th and Micheál Martin about 20 minutes before the Taoiseach announcing that it would be dissolved on Friday afternoon. So it's game on. It's been game on for a while, I suppose, but really last night, a sense of relief for TDs that they finally had clarity that it wasn't going to be called at some unexpected time and they'd have to rush back to the constituencies. So there's plenty of time to have the posters ready for tomorrow afternoon. Probably around 3 o'clock, Simon Harris speaks at government buildings before going to Áras an Uachtaráin.
And Paul, it's been interesting. I mean, for an election that's been so long awaited, so long speculated about, we've almost fallen into it, haven't we, in terms of, you know, the timetable this week. And we've had this kind of spectacle. You've been writing about this, the jostling between Roderick O'Gorman, the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach about, you know, the whole thing being called.
Yeah, from the opposition's perspective, this is just a ridiculous charade, a waste of time, and the government could have been actually doing things rather than talking about it. But nonetheless, media is culpable. We want to know the date, I think. Voters want to know the date as well. So it became a regular story. And initially, Micheál Martin was taking the high ground, talking about the distance of completing your full term, continuing into 2025. And then he did a volte-face and said, well, if we want to do it in 2024, as long as we've got key legislation through, we can do it. And as Micheál alluded to, Roderick O'Gorman decided he needed to unburden himself and give his suggestions about the 29th of November as well. Ultimately, I don't think it makes a blind bit of difference. Once the starting gun is fired on Friday at 3 o'clock, that's it. And people will very quickly move on to the issues. Today, we're recording at around 4 o'clock on Thursday, and we had leaders' questions taken by Micheál Martin, and an awful lot of the issues that were discussed there are likely to be brought up in the campaign. Government, management of the finances, cost of living, houses, medicine if you throw in, climate change, crime, and migration. You've probably got a fair amount of the territory on which this election is going to be fought. So here we go. And, you know, it's only going to be a 3-week campaign. And there's so many different issues that you could talk about. But here's one, just one statistic. If you look at the last time we had a general election, 2020, and 3/4 of the TDs who decided to defend their seat held them. So in as much as there's uncertainty and all the rest of it, that's the whole incumbency thing. TDs who have a seat, 3 out of 4, they're going to get back.
But there's also the issue, and I mean, we're going to be, you know, hearing an awful lot about opinion polls, Mary, in the next couple of weeks. But we do know from research into this, an awful lot of voters, about half of them, make up their minds during the campaign. Party affiliation in Ireland is dropping, so campaigns do matter, candidates do matter, and you can't necessarily predict now very much about the way the next 3 weeks will go.
Yeah, and you know, general elections used to be fairly predictable events, predictable ordeals in Ireland, whether, you know, Fianna Fáil against Fine Gael was the main question. But that all changed since 2008 after the financial crash. And every election, there have been 3 general elections since then, has led to, you know, significant sort of change of the political landscape. So this issue of party attachment, membership of parties has waned, and people are making their minds up more and more during general election campaigns. So in 2020, nearly half of voters decided what way they were going to vote during the campaign itself. And then if you go to the European elections earlier this year, 28% made up their mind in the last 24 hours before casting their ballot. So what we can glean from that really is that this election, whatever about the build-up, whatever about the long run into this campaign, it'll be won or lost over the next 22 days.
And the context for this election now has changed dramatically, Paul, because we've had the election of Donald Trump in the United States.
And not we have.
Not just an election, but a landslide, winning the popular vote, winning the House, winning the Senate. So now he's back in power and he can do whatever he wants to do. So a week ago, we were looking at this election campaign thinking it would be about all the parties competing upon how they'd spend all the billions and billions that are there in the government exchequer. Now the question is, will they still be there after 4 years of a Trump presidency?
I mean, who knows what Donald Trump is going to do? If there's one thing certain, he's unpredictable. He's also, we hear, transactional. So it's possible that he will roll back on some of the campaign promises he's made, even though in his acceptance speech he was going to do absolutely everything that he said. And that could include several economic measures which could have a detrimental impact on Ireland. Just how detrimental, we don't know just yet. And when it comes to what extent a Trump presidency is going to influence Irish voters, I'm not so sure. There's some here among the centrist parties who believe it'll spook some of the voters and that they will close in on the centre, that they won't want to take any risks at a time where there's turbulence. Just exactly how strong that is, I'm not convinced. I think it's too early to say. I back what Mary says, absolutely. So many people will be making up their minds. To quote a good American, Donald Rumsfeld, the former US Defence Secretary, we've got unknown unknowns out there. The things we don't know that are going to happen in the campaign that are going to influence voters, and that's probably going to have a more influence on the ultimate outcome.
Yeah, like it's clear from Simon Harris in The Dáil yesterday, talking about this transatlantic trade shock, that Fine Gael's opening gambit in this election campaign is, you know, don't touch us with the sort of fragile economic progress in our hands. You know, we've been able
don't
to...
Don't hold the baby.
Exactly. My baby billions.
And, you know, that was his message saying, you know, what would... We have put away money. Would Sinn Féin have done that? No.
Which was exactly, of course, Fianna Fáil's message in 2007.
Exactly.
And Seamus Brennan was out saying, who would you trust if things get bad?
And it's also, if you think about 2020, because the argument in 2020 was Brexit.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got the threat of Brexit coming. We've done so much good work protecting this country. Again, don't hit me with the Brexit baby.
It was the
in
exact same opening to the general election campaign in 2020. Fine Gael's exact same message. We're going to the delicate stages of Brexit negotiations now. We're the ones to stick with. We're the ones to be trusted. And of course, it didn't feature for voters. 2016, Fine Gael also started off with the economy. Remember their slogan, let's keep the recovery going. Yep. Didn't really land with people because people weren't feeling that recovery. In fact, that slogan backlashed. So while they'll try and sort of have the narrative of this all around the economy, you know, our lessons from the previous elections is that they won't have it their own way.
And I mean, you were talking about the strength of incumbency, you know, Paul, you were talking about that, weren't you? Yeah. But the point is, I love John Byrne Murdoch and the Financial Times, his graphs, and he had these really interesting ones earlier in the year that in the year of elections, what we're getting is a growing gender gap between young men and young women. And that seems to be getting borne out in a lot of the results we're seeing around the place. He had one out today that in this year of elections, incumbents are making losses in all those elections. So I presume that's something that would spark hope, Micheál, in a Sinn Féin heart?
Yeah, I think there is more hope in Sinn Féin than the national polls might suggest. I mean, I think that is borne out by the fact that they are adding candidates. They could be up to 70 candidates before the close of nominations at some point into next week. So that would suggest there is a possibility. I suppose there is something in this that people think by feeling. And I suppose the government are banking on the fact that a lot of money did go into people's accounts and the energy credit and all that is there. And even if there are risks now about the future, they do have enough money for the moment to get through. And when it's about making an election pitch, that is significant. At the same time, if you are one of that large amount of people who are caught in one way or the other, whether it's renting, whether it's being unable to buy a home and all that, and that is a sizable group, what the government have been saying and not being able to deliver sufficiently for those kind of people is surely going to still be a major factor in this election. And I don't... Conservatism probably wouldn't trump that desire to have a property or at least have security in a property.
And that's probably why the Social Democrats went after property in both contributions in the Dáil this week with both Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, and also with Simon Harrison. They're speaking to that whole block of voters, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, still living at home, saying that the language being used wasn't just sort of false, it was a con job from the government, talking about how they're going to do so much on affordable housing. So there is a real pitch by them for that block vote, and they were really going for it. I mean, Holly Cairns is eloquent anyway, but there was just an extra edge to it, and that was reflecting what the emotion that Micheál was talking about, the despair that many people have, saying, I'm never going to get on the property ladder. I will never have what my parents had.
There is that maybe question of language too, and it's not a huge deal given that the election is going now and that. But they did all say at a certain point that there wouldn't be an election. And maybe it doesn't matter. But I mean, the Cian Corlea did at some point in the summer say, well, if people are in government and they say something as straightforward as that and then they don't deliver on it, they do something else, that raises questions about trust and belief in what people say. Catherine Connolly talking about this last night and that whole long joust about the timing of the election, again pointing to language and how language has to mean something, and Hallie Kearns referencing it today. I do think there's something in that. And then if you go to Trump in America and that sense of disillusionment with politicians and how he's not a politician, I think it kind of plays into that, even if it's not a huge deal as to the timing issue.
And maybe the way we're seeing it playing out in our politics here, in terms of, you know, that sense of a public backlash against incumbency across the board, maybe the way we're seeing it is in the growth of independence. Is this going to be the year of independence, the election of independence?
Well, I think the last couple of elections have been the elections of independence, even though the last election was the election of Sinn Féin mostly. But, you know, I think this will be an election where there will be independence in, you know, almost every constituency in the country, some of them former Fianna Fáil candidates and councillors. Noel Thomas, for example, in Galway West, who was formerly Fianna Fáil. And there are just so many of them. And, you know, then the question arises, I suppose, as to whether these independents will form any role in the next government. Roderick O'Gorman, the Green Party leader this morning, warning, you know, you don't want you know, a mishmash of independents propping up a government. You need, you know, stability. And I think the preference, if you speak to people in Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil, is that they'd, if they were to be elected to form a government, and if they needed, you know, some other group to make up the numbers, that their preference would be a smaller party rather than working with independents. You know, parties have, you know, whip system. They have more, you know, easier to deal with, really. You're not sort of dealing with many individual constituency demands. You're dealing with policy.
I suppose it depends on the independent you're dealing with. In terms of the smaller parties.
That issue of a bit of green will be important across the government, because climate can't be ignored by a new government.
Well, given what we're hearing in the news.
In the States, I mean, it was completely.
But the situation with climate, the facts about what's happening to our climate, already breaching the 1.5 degrees. You think what a huge issue it was in 2020. You think of the Greens being swept in. How resilient will their vote prove to be? And they're certainly putting up a bit more of a fight, aren't
they,
on their
feisty,
way out the
there's
door?
There's no doubt about that. And it isn't going to be 2011, but I suppose it still could be quite damaging for them. I mean, if it's 12 now, could it be down to somewhere like 3 or 4? That's quite possible. I suppose the fact that Ivana Bacic has been fairly prominent on green issues as well, and you have people like Sive O'Neill running for Labour, who would be seen to be quite strong on green issues, running in Waterford. I think if government will, when it comes to it, want to be seen to be fairly strong on that, and it could point to some like Labour or the Social Democrats as possible.
Plus it gives them cover for a lot of the measures that they would have had to have introduced anyhow. You'll hear people in Fine Gael saying that, you know, that having the Greens there gave them some cover that they might have needed for their own party grassroots, you know.
I think Leo Varadkar was fairly straightforward about that, wasn't he? Yeah.
But I think part of it in relation to the Greens and the change and that sort of little bit of sizzle now is coming from the leadership of Roderick O'Gorman, who seems to want to take a bit more combative political style as opposed to advocating environmental standards, which would have been more of what Eamon Ryan was doing. And that's indicative of someone like Senator Roisin Garvey, who loved going on to prime time. Michael Healy Ray, Danny Healy Ray, you want to talk about what environment means to rural Ireland, I'll take you on. She's fighting down in Clare, and people down in Clare are suggesting that she's going to be in the final shakeup. They're not saying she's getting a seat, but there's an indication there of a fight back on the Greens. And anyone who's looking at the television and looking at Valencia, just seeing what can actually happen, a year's rainwater in what, 24 hours or something, and the whole city flooded, you get some indication of what we are heading to. As you say, that's a visual reminder of once you start exceeding 1.5, which we've done.
And there was another point, wasn't there, way back when people were talking about a November election, and it was said, I don't know, was it true or not, that Leo Varadkar was fairly spooked by what happened in Middleton last year, and that happened around this time of the year. If there's a possibility of anything else like that happening during the campaign, even if it's localised, it still could have a major impact, and it is a damaging one for politicians, particularly when they are seen to be behind the curve on so many of those preventative measures in towns and villages up and down the country.
So given that it's going to be 87 TDs to form the government, because we have a larger number of TDs in the next thought, you were saying Micheál, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil running about 80 each.
At the moment it's 80 each, and then Sinn Féin saying they can get to about 70. They probably will get to 70.
So then you're going to have to look around either at the independents or the other smaller parties. So talk to me about the Social Democrats, about Labour, about ANTHU, about Independent Ireland, People Before Profit. I mean, how many of them are in the mix and what would the red lines be? Well, who are potential partners?
But, you know, Labour are talking themselves up. They really have a sense after the local elections that they've got new candidates who can go out there. They're also delighted to see someone like Alan Kelly from Tipperary saying that he's going to go again. There was some suggestion a number of months ago that he might hang up his
hat. Do you think he wants to be a minister again?
And there's an indication
he's
that
been
if
very
Alan Kelly,
straight about that with the Nina Guardian, so it's there.
So it's there, exactly. So he sees that this is a party which could double its numbers. And for if it was the case that you had got a block of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, it's that type of addition, just as the Greens were, 12, that can really, really be influential. And if you look back in the past 4.5 years, the Green Party with 12 members were far more influential than the parliamentary numbers they actually had. So if you're looking at Labour, they have obviously difficulties. Sean Sherlock is standing down after that constituency change and his heartland was taken away. But they feel they can make gains, not just in Dublin, but around the country as well. Whether it will come to fruition, who knows? That's what the three-week campaign's about.
Yeah, look, places like Cork North Central, also Limerick, where you the two young councillors, kind of whether it's John Maher or whether it's Conor Sheehan in Limerick, those kind of areas, if that were to come in, and Ciarán Ahern in Dublin South West as well. So they're the type of areas.
And Dublin South Central and Cork looking. North Central. I mean, there's places Maher, all over through,
So that's the interesting thing too there is Ivana Bacic and Roderick O'Gorman have both said they will talk to each other afterwards to try and form some kind of a block. I mean, does that block become a binding block when they're talking to the bigger parties then?
Yeah, the centre-left block.
Yes.
And the Social Democrats, are they really interested in the dirty, grubby business of drawing up a programme for government and compromising?
Well, they say they are. Holly Kearns did say that very clearly, didn't she, at the last party convention. What I did find striking, talking to delegates at that and doing vox pops, is that I wasn't quite sure whether the membership were quite as keen on that. And they did seem to have much stronger red lines. And it did remind me where the Greens were all the way back in 2007. So if it were to come to that, I would think of the three parties, Greens, Labour and Social Democrats, may have the hardest internal selling job to do. And I don't know how that would work.
Be interesting to see how ANTHU and Independent Ireland do as well, won't it?
Yeah, I think that both of those feel that with that shift away, with the Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil vote, which used to be 80% and dropping below 50, is this an opportunity for them? They feel, looking at the independent vote, that there is a thirst for an alternative. Independent Ireland clearly feels that it can capture much of that. In Cork North Central, it would be one place where they think that they're going to make a gain. We're still waiting on Michael Fitzmaurice to tell us where he's going to be.
No, he's decided.
Did he?
Roscommon, Galway.
Right, so no surprise. He's sticking with
what
he was going to do.
Wouldn't tell us on
TWIP, but anyhow. He finally got there. But I
finally
think
no news.
He finally... but he's finally over the line. So I do feel that they feel they're going to have a good day. They've got good reason, if you're looking at the polls, to believe that they can do it. They do have not just sort of new people into politics, but as Mary referenced, an awful lot of people from other parties who know the lie of the land. So I think there's a confidence there. ANTHU, I just feel that they couldn't be as confident as Independent Ireland. It's just a bigger arrangement, even though it's a younger party, and I just feel they've got the heft behind them.
Yeah, I think there's up to, on the Electoral Commission website, I think there's about 20 political parties, and it'll be interesting to see, of course, many of the other smaller parties, they'd be of a nationalist hue or a right-wing hue. It'll be interesting to see whether there, and there'll be independence, of course, coming from that side of the fence. It'll be interesting to see how much immigration plays.
Exactly. I mean, if you take a constituency I was writing a profile on, which is Dublin South Central. There was a huge Sinn Féin vote for Angus Osnoddig, 2 quotas, but he didn't have the candidate. Where does that go? And people are saying that within that constituency, they simply don't know where is that Sinn Féin vote if it does drop, as people anticipated. Maybe they're wrong. If that votes, where does that go? Does that go to sort of independents? Does that go to people who have disillusioned with Sinn Féin in relation to the stance that they've taken on migration? Does it break towards parties where some of the transfers went to, like People Before Profit? We simply do not know, and I think we won't know until closer to the election day.
And this is another impact potentially, isn't it, in the briefings about the potential fallout from the Trump re-election is the impact on Ukraine, because the speculation is, I think we've 917 people from Ukraine came into the country last month, that there would be very many more if Donald Trump brings this war to an end in a day, as he suggests, and many more Ukrainians don't want to live where they're
And that's the issue in relation to Donald Trump. And it seems to be the policy that the Irish government is going to adopt, which is we're going to wait and see what his decisions are, rather than getting too het up in relation to what he said. So take, for example, the issue of Ukraine. Is that something he's going to be able to deal with in a day? I doubt it. But is it something which he could have an influence on? Absolutely. But we just don't know what that is likely to be. And I think what's interesting from a European perspective, we're looking at this coming, the second coming of Donald Trump. And if you look around what's happening in Europe, you've got a German economy which is in trouble, you've got a German government which is close to collapse but not quite collapsed, and you've got a French president who's heading out. So usually the power blocks of Europe, France, Germany, are not at the races. So Europe, rather than looking at Donald Trump, could do well to look at its own situation and try and sort that out first.
It'll be interesting as well. Michael McGrath had his European Commission position hearing this week, and it seems to have gone very well for him. The Defence Commissioner, I think, or the potential Defence Commission nominee, was in today. But certainly defence is one of those issues that's going to get catapulted up now the EU's agenda, given that Donald Trump thinks most Europeans are freeloaders in that regard. So it'll be interesting to see whether any opinions on Irish neutrality.
But like, obviously we're not members of NATO, but like, he does have an argument. If they're supposed to be spending between 2 and 4% of their national budget on weapons and they're not, he can say you should be paying more. I think the difficulty comes for those countries who are very close to Russia, you know, the Baltic states or Poland. If you happen to be one of those and you're looking at Russia advancing and Ukraine is going to be sold down the river, if that's the case, we don't know what it is, you're going to be alarmed. And once again, that's going to make people focus in Europe about, well, what is it about a European defence if you have an unreliable partner across the Atlantic?
I think neutrality will be an issue somewhere there in the election, but I think there is a visceral one on the doorsteps, and I think government are kind of worried about it, and that is what's happening in Gaza. And you can see again today on the final day of the Dáil, Micheál Martin saying that Ireland will intervene with that South African case that's been taken against Israel. And also during the week, those kind of efforts to show that the occupied territories bill is progressing, even though it really isn't, I suppose, until a new government gets in place. So that is a tricky one. I mean, the government can say that when it comes to Gaza, and they are regarded internationally as very strong on this, but internally and at home, it is something that they probably are under degree of pressure on. It's other parties have focused in and say that they've been strong on words but not on deeds.
And that's where Donald Trump comes back in again, because the first person to congratulate him was the Israeli Prime Minister, who has fired his defence minister. Apparently he was looking at what alternatives there might be to total war, and total war looks as if it's going to continue.
Coming back to our election here, there's still time to register to vote. There's still time to check whether you're on the register, and don't be listening to us or giving out about politicians. Go out and vote.
Yeah, so I think until tomorrow, if you want to get a postal vote, you have to get that sorted. And then to get on the supplementary register, you have to check the register and get on before Tuesday. So it's a short campaign, so probably less time than usual. So you have to kind of get at it fairly quickly.
But yes, do use your vote. Get out, read the literature, have a think, and then go out and make your voice be heard.
Thanks, Bono.
I'm driving off any cliff anytime soon.
It'll be interesting to see which constituency ends up with the longest ballot paper, won't it?
And
I don't want to wrap things up today without mentioning, because we had the sad job this week of laying to rest our former colleague, David Davenport. The music at David's funeral was just as you'd expect, no less, from David Davenport and his family. The music was beautiful. The farewells, the tribute from Brian Dobson, it was really gorgeous. But I was thinking afterwards, you know, you think of Charlie Bird, you think of Tommy Gorman, you think of David Davenport, many of the faces we saw in the crowds there paying their last respects to David. There was a generation of journalists that were shaped by the troubles in this country, wasn't there? And it, you know, Niak for Ola Heidzer Rishdan.
I think when it came to David in recent years, he was a political correspondent, or as he termed, he was a professional loiterer here at Leinster House, hooking people at the right time. But probably what he'd be best remembered for was his time in Northern Ireland, arriving at a very difficult time in the early 1990s, staying right through until the Good Friday Agreement. And that was tricky. We learned at his memorial mass for his family, where things were being daubed on walls. Yeah. I mean, this was a very difficult time. Personally, I always will remember David as being super smart.
He was really, really funny. He had an intellectual curiosity about most things, and that included just trying to get a rise out of you. So if you weren't on your game, you could end up being in big trouble with David Devenpower. And the other thing I liked about him was he was a man of the classics, and he used to roll out these quotations every now and again. One of them was talking about someone who had failed. He said, quoting a Roman general, I think it was, could have been a great leader had he ever led.
It was Tacitus, and it was about the Emperor Galba.
There you go. See, he lives on.
But that's only because I think Harry McGee quoted that.
Well, it was a line he used to use, but it was indicative of the man who would be erudite, who would be cultured, and in some ordinary news report, he was able to just elevate it. It could be funny, it could be wise, it could be witty, but it was DDP.
And he had a brilliant head of hair.
He sure
all
did.
Right, David Davenport, rest in peace. We miss you. We'll talk to you again next week. Till then, goodbye.